Scientists have been searching for years to find the holy grail of solar power, an efficient and inexpensive way to harvest energy from the sun. But current solar panels capture only about a third of the sun's energy. That's why you need so many to power a home or business. The future of solar panels may be the present use of solar technology by the military. We want to spend some time there today with Keith Johnson. He covers national security for the Wall Street Journal. He joins us now. And Keith, the military has long been at the forefront of new technology. They need to fix an old problem, so they turn to, often invent, new solutions. So, but how did this solar push start in the military?
Well, you know, this is actually something that the military has been looking at for years now, more than a decade. Today's military in general is a lot more energy intensive than the military in Vietnam or even the first Gulf War by about a factor of four.
And you give a great way of demonstrating that. They have so many things to power that they carry on them. Tell us what some of them are and then what they have to carry to power them.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. There's more vehicles and heavier vehicles than there used to be, so they need more fuel, shipped up to forward bases. But then the individual troopers and grunts and soldiers and Marines, are carrying 100 to 120-pound packs at times. They've got radios, GPSs. Some of them have individual surveillance packages that they can, they can launch handheld drones. There's a whole lot of electronic gear, laptops, nav systems, things like that. All of those things require power when they're on the move. That means they require batteries, and that's actually one of the terrible burdens that's facing warfighters these days, the cost and weight of batteries.
You write that batteries can make up as much as 20% of the weight of the packs, and we know some of these packs are over 100 pounds, so that's
exactly.
That's a lot.
Right.
And you mentioned that they need fuel as well to power generators, for instance, that charge things in outposts, and this transporting of fuel is one of the main reasons for deaths in the war zones.
Absolutely. This was the whole driver. And this happened, initially 5 years ago in Iraq. These long, vulnerable, tenuous fuel and water convoys were favorite targets for IED attacks, led to a lot of casualties. In Afghanistan, very similar situation. You have, about 30% of all the fuel that's shipped in theater just goes to power generators. It's not for, tanks and planes and helicopters. Mm-hmm. And that's a real source of vulnerability. That's what the Marines set out to sort of tackle with this program, was to find a way to power some of their gear at their forward operating bases, without relying on these diesel generators.
Right. Remove some of the convoys, remove some of the targets. You write about one military leader in particular who was writing back and saying, I need something. And then there was a portion of the military that responded. How so?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a famous call back in 2006 in western Iraq from, then General Richard Zillmer, who was the commander of the multinational forces in Iraq, who made a priority one request for renewable energy for forward bases because he was getting hammered. That went nowhere. But a couple years later, there were more requests coming from Iraq and from Afghanistan. And this time, the Office of Naval Research kicked into gear and, took some off-the-shelf commercial solar technology, nothing fancy, pretty garden variety stuff, and equipped it for military use.
Well, didn't they at one point even just go to Home Depot to get something they needed?
Yeah, because they made a conscious decision to go, with an 80% solution today rather than, hanging around and trying to work on something that would be 100% solution. So they just grabbed what they could. That's what they're using out there, but that's what they were using since last November in one of the most dangerous parts of Afghanistan.
Well, let's take a look at some of that technology because, as you write, in some of these remote bases in Afghanistan, solar power is all there is. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to be hearing about a solar panel. It is so thin. I'm looking at it right now. It's like, how you can get that those rolls of dried fruit that are between plastic, they're just so thin.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm looking at one right now. But one of your articles recently featured a picture of a Marine at a remote outpost powering equipment with what looks like several, rolls of wallpaper that he's tacking up on a brick wall. Describe it, and what's he doing with that?
Yeah, that's actually one of the two solar solutions that they have out there. One is sort of the big standard types of panels that you might have on your roof. That actually helps substitute for some of the diesel generators. They have to run air conditioning in the summertime. They have to run heaters in the winter for the tents. So there's an awful lot of energy consumption that just goes into basically housing for these guys. The other thing that we have the photo of is called Spaces, and that's actually a rollable, man-portable, very lightweight solar power application that then can power the batteries in the field. And this is one of the great surprises for those Marines, is that they found by taking these solar panels with them on patrol, they could actually repower their gear on the move, and they weren't nearly so dependent on getting resupply for new batteries and things like that. So they were able to become a lot more mobile, a lot more lightweight, lethal, effective. It was a real tactical bonus, and that really surprised the Marine Corps.
Yeah. Is it saving money?
Well, it is saving money in the sense, you know, like the batteries, for instance. The India Company of the 3rd, 5th Marines did a 3-week patrol using the portable spaces panels. And the Marine Corps told me that they saved about $40,000 just in batteries for that 3-week patrol. The upfront cost is higher.
Right.
But, you know, A, you get a savings over the longer term, and then B, you have more immediate tactical benefits. So from their point of view, it's a pretty smart investment.
Well, whenever the military does something like this, follows through on the axiom, necessity is the mother of invention, and they do. I mean, whether it's prosthetics after one war or treatment of brain injuries after another, or as in this case we're seeing using this kind of technology, it does come back and trickle down to more common usage. Do you see that starting to happen?
Well, I mean, this is not something that's going to be at the, you know, the grasp of the garden variety consumer. I mean, the spaces suite, the sort of thing that the guy was hanging there on the wall in Afghanistan, that runs about $5,000. There are some slimmed down applications you can get out there for, you know, for campers and things like that to power your gear. Still run you $500 to $1,000. You know, this isn't
right.
Something you can pick up on Amazon quite yet. However, one of the things that's interesting in the past with the military is simply the scale. It's the biggest energy user in the U.S., period. So when they commit to using a certain kind of energy, they're a really big customer, they're a long-term customer. And this is true not just for solar power. Biofuels producers are really excited about the military because they burn a lot of fuel.
Mm.
The military's also, you know, been looking at wind power for bases, you know, for fixed installations. And so the hope of the renewable energy sector in general is that you have a really big, really rich, really long-term customer that might be able to give some scale to the sector that has been lacking so far.
Yeah. Keith Johnson, National Security Reporter for The Wall Street Journal. By the way, Keith, you mentioned something in passing. I just have to ask you. You mentioned that the troops are carrying so many things in their packs, including drones. You're writing about aerial drones about 2 feet wide that they carry around in these combat backpacks. And they can launch them like paper airplanes to, for instance, survey a mountaintop? Is that true?
Not that every single patrol has one, but yes, those things need power as well. So it's just, you know, and it's an example of the proliferation of gizmos and gadgets, you know, that didn't used to be there. All of these things require juice, and that in the end is what's been driving a lot of this innovation on the part of the military.
Keith Johnson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're talking about the future of solar power. We just heard how some Marines in Afghanistan are using lightweight sort of roll-up solar panels to power remote outposts so they don't have to carry so many heavy batteries or truck in so much fuel in long, vulnerable convoys. Some of that lightweight portable solar technology is already filtering back here into the civilian world. Consumers, for instance, can buy backpacks with small, flexible solar panels in them, but they're very inefficient right now at gathering the sun's energy. But based on some advances made by government researchers, a company right over the river from us in Cambridge, Massachusetts, has developed an ultra-thin solar panel. Again, think fruit roll-ups, you know, or gold leaf. It's that thin. It's also highly efficient because of tiny nano antennas, 1/25th the diameter of human hair. They're called nantennas. Dennis Lafer is president and chief technology officer of MicroContinuum, which is developing this solar mat. He joins us in the studio and has brought a small square sample. I'm holding it right now. It does feel like gold leaf between plastic.
Essentially, that's what it is.
It's quite something. And you were telling us, we just spoke to Keith, a reporter from The Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal actually played a role in getting this plastic that encases this thin. Tell
it
us.
It was completely inadvertent, but this material that you're holding, Robin, is made on polyethylene, which is the same material that sandwich bags, Ziploc bags are made out of. And for this particular application, we needed something that was ultra-thin. So we bought all the sandwich bags and Ziploc bags we could find at all the stores and measured them. And none of them were thin enough. And it was a few days later, I was having breakfast, and I had taken the Wall Street Journal out of its home delivery bag.
Thin little bag.
I looked at it, and the light bulb went on. I said, this is polyethylene. Took it to lab, measured it. Perfect. Our first samples were made with that material.
Wow. And it's just, we'll have pictures at our website, hereandnow.org. What can it do?
Well, the material you're holding is actually part of the solution. It's the antenna layer.
So the antenna's in this tiny, thin little patch.
That's what gives it that colorful look. It's like a prism.
Right. Shining all different colors.
Yes.
Right? Yep.
And that's because of that structure. The other component we need that we're now beginning to work on is a way of extracting the energy that's captured by the nano antennas. We need very high-frequency electronics to extract it. So what we intend to do is incorporate the electronics with this film. It would be another very thin layer so that we can extract the energy out of these antennas.
Right. So right now, you know that this solar mat can take in all sorts of solar energy. Your right. issue is, how do I get it back out again?
How do I turn it into DC or low-frequency electricity that we can actually use?
Yeah. So when you do that, how do you envision using this mat?
Well, it would actually work like a conventional solar cell, but the advantages of something that are ultra-thin are, for example, a home use. The current technology which uses those very large solar panels, mm-hmm. they're made on crystalline silicon, which is a brittle glass, and it's relatively thick. So they can't be flexed, so they have to be made in these frames, and the frames have to be mounted on your roof. And in some cases, your roof has to be reinforced. And they're somewhat expensive. I think more than half the cost of those cells are just the installation, the frame, that part of it. Things like this, and similar to the ones that Keith showed in his article, are light enough and flexible enough that they could be incorporated in such things as shingles. I was also thinking about, he was talking about the UAVs.
These are the drones.
Yeah, the drones. So if you could cover a lot of the surface with these kind of ultra-lightweight structures that are also efficient, then they could stay up for quite a while.
Oh, so you would put this thin, thin material right on things like
drones.
Right
on the wings.
And
yeah.
things that needed
yeah.
energy.
You'd yeah.
put it, you could put it right on a car.
Yes. Now, as you could see from, Keith's article, there are flexible materials available today. But the drawbacks of them are most of the flexible solar cells, or PV cells we call them, they have to be processed or manufactured at very high temperature. So you can't put them on cheap plastic like this. They have to be on like stainless steel foil or some sort of metal. There are some that do go on plastics, but they're have very low efficiency. So if you can combine a material that could be made at low temperature and has very high efficiency.
Like a Wall Street Journal bag.
That's right.
Well, and let's stop there for a second, because that's what's so important about these nantennas, these tiny nano antennas. Solar panels right now on homes and businesses can only take in about 30% of the sun's energy. These nantennas can take in 90%.
Well, the actual material you buy today could range anywhere from the ones you're talking about in backpacks are less than 5%.
Less than 5%.
Yeah. Mm. But they're very inexpensive, and they're plastic and flexible. The typical solar cells are more from in the 10 to 15% range. They're approaching 20 in manufacture, but that's not all that common yet. In that picture of the Wall Street Journal, it shows a whole wall covered with these flexible panels. Now, if you can make those either a fifth of the area or the same area would be five times more powerful, it could
right.
produce five times more power, then it's a win-win for everybody.
Right. So you're saying that the solar mats that we, and we'll have the pictures at our website, that we are seeing used in Afghanistan, they may be bigger and bulkier than what you're working on.
Yes.
But for now, that's helping the troops
Absolutely,
that have
yeah.
no other source. But the goal is to get it nice and light like this.
Right. And I'm sure the Department of Energy and DARPA and those agencies are working diligently to push in those directions.
Yeah. Well, we're reading that Dr. Daniel Nocera at MIT has developed a solar cell the size of a leaf, and it creates energy the same way a leaf does through photosynthesis. So you have an artificial leaf. What else is out there right now that you've got your eye on?
Well, there's a couple different things. People are using different materials besides silicon, copper, indium, selenide, different things that could be coated by printing like a printing press. Right now, unfortunately, they have to be then heat treated to make them work effectively, and that has to be done at very high temperature. But probably where most of the action is improving what we already have.
Dennis Slafer, President and Chief Technology Officer of MicroContinuum Incorporated, developing a thin, low-cost, efficient solar mat. It's the holy grail of the solar industry. A few years off, but we'll have pictures of what he's got so far at hereandnow.org. Dennis, thank you.
My pleasure, Robin.